My sobriety date is September 20th, 2005. My home group is Students of Sobriety in Poughkeepsie. We meet on Monday nights. We have three meetings there on Monday nights, a beginner's meeting, a beginner step meeting, and a step meeting. And we also have a big book and traditions meeting on Saturday mornings. I have a sponsor. I have sponsees. I guess we'll just get started here. I did a lot of drinking and I did a lot of drugs, and that's what brought me to September 20th of 2005. I know, like, most of the stuff I've done, probably everybody in here has done it, or if you've done it, I've done it. If I haven't, then I probably didn't drink that much. I went to St. Joe's in at September 20th. I remember when I was riding up there, I was riding up on the bus. They came and picked me up in Albany. I had my father drop me off at the bus station or whatever up there. And I don't know why I had him drop me off. I didn't even like him at the time. But on my way up there, I just remember, like, those feelings were, like vivid. That was, like, the start of a journey that was, like, very tough, but, like, also, like, beautiful at the same time. I remember on my way up there, I was just, like, praying that, like, the bus was going to crash and, like, that a tractor trailer was going to run through it and, like, just end it for me, you know? Like, I was, like, ready to die, but I definitely wasn't going to, like, kill myself because I spent most of my life trying to survive. So when I got up there, it was, it was a pretty strict place. I went up there because of, I got into some trouble, and it was kind of odd that I went to rehab, that I even had the option to, because the people I grew up with, like my friends and my family, like nobody ever went to rehab. Like, you either went to prison or you died, you know? That was just our lives. Like, my best friend, who's my cousin, and like I'm still close to him right this day, is he makes parole in 2025, and he went away in 2002. So, we didn't know really what rehab was, but I figured it was just like, I don't know, when the judge said you can go to rehab, I was like, I don't know what that is, I'm not going. He was like, well, you can go back to prison, and I was like, all right, you know, I'll take that, you know, and like, at least I know what that is, you know, and my lawyer was just like, shut up, you know, and, next thing you know, I'm on this bus going up to Lake Placid, you know, like, the only other times I've been up that way was, like, on a bus that was, like, run by the state or whatever, but, it was crazy, because when I got up there, like I said, like, I didn't feel like I belonged there. Like, if you told me, like, they're like, this is for drug addicts and alcoholics, and I was like, well, I'm not that, you know, I'm just having the bad breaks, you know, I kind of, like, I don't know what was going on up there. I don't know, like, I think that for me, like, my higher power is God, and he was working for me at that time. You know, he was, like, he gave me the ability to, like, stay open-minded and to, like, just, like, take everything that was coming in. And up there, it was trying, you know, like, there was a couple situations that kind of opened my eyes to things. I remember there was this one, it was run by the Franciscan friars, and this guy, Father Tim, or Father Dan, rather. I was sitting in his office, and I was a complete maniac, you know. I was like, I'm mandated here, this is crap, I don't want to be here. He's like, well, leave, you know, like, there's no locks on these doors. I'm like, what? And he was like, just leave, because I remember for forever, I was like, I'm mandated to this program, like, I have to be here. And he was like, you don't have to be here, like, you're mandated back to prison if you leave. You know, it's your choice to be here. Like, and I was like, huh, yeah, that's true. You know, like, so I was like, well, screw this, I'm leaving. Like, you want to talk about my feelings? You're going to be crying at my father, blah, 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 and like this. And, you know, and I was like, I'm leaving. Like, I'm going to go to prison. So, like, I went to go open the door, and the doorknob fell off. You know, and, like, I was stuck in this man's office. And I was just looking at him, and he's dying laughing. And I'm like, what are you laughing at? He was just like, because you're a strange character, you know, like, and he was just like, it doesn't look like you're able to leave, you know. I was like, you know, and like, I just like started crying again, like, forever, like, I hadn't cried in forever, you know what I mean? And I'm sitting in this place, in this rehab in St. Joe's in Lake Placid, crying every single day, you know, and not knowing why. Anyway, so that was like one thing that was pretty interesting. That was one thing that always stood out. Well, the second thing that always stood out was my mother not coming to the family session. My mother used to always come and see me no matter where I was. You know, she was always like, if like I was in trouble and I was on the run, like she'd be the one looking for me. You know, or if I was locked up, she would come and see me. She would come see me once a month when I was away doing a bid once. And one time she wasn't able to see me because I got into a big fight and I was in trouble and like I wasn't allowed and like I was just in like 24-hour lockup. And the next month I was out and she came and like I walk up and she's just sitting there crying. I'm like, what's the matter with you? You know, like I'm the one that's locked up, you know? And she was like, they wouldn't let me in last time I was here. You know, she's like, I drive hours to come see you and they wouldn't let me here. And like she's like, I'm never coming to see you ever again. And I'm like, yeah, right. You know, like she's like, no matter where you are, whatever, I'm not coming back to ever see you. And I was like, okay. So she left and she didn't come back, you know. And when I was at rehab, I was like, are you going to come for family session? She said, no. And like she had to write a letter and somebody else's mother had to write me that letter or read me that letter. And when that person's mother was reading my letter, I felt that. You know what I mean? Like, I realized, like, that's when I realized what I did to my family. I never robbed from my family, never stole from my family, never beat them up, anything like that. But, like, the worrying about me, like I said, when I was on the run, and, like, if there was, like, something going on in the streets, my sisters knew about it, they'd go tell my mom, like, Marshall's involved with this, and, like, I'd be gone for 2 months, you know? And, like, I didn't realize that she didn't sleep for 2 months worrying about where I was, you know? She was happy when I was in jail. She was happy that I was in rehab, you know? Those were two things that like really stuck out for me when I was at rehab. When I came back down, I went back down to Poughkeepsie. I had to finish out a court case, and I finished out the court case, and I had to go to back to jail for like 5 days to finish out a sentence. And I remember sitting there, and I was like, right when I was leaving, I looked at the lawyer and said, "Do I have to go back to that halfway house I'm in?" He's like, "No." He's like, "I was like, do I have to go back to any AA meetings?" And he's like, "No." And I was like, cool, so I'm going to go to jail, do my thing, and then I'm going to leave, and then I'm going to be good, you know? I went into jail, and where I live, like, they put everybody together that has something to do with each other, you know, to kind of, like, keep the peace in the jail. So I was in there, like, when I went in, I was with my cousins and a couple friends, and I walked in, and they were, like, in there, like, smoking, and they were like, you want to smoke? And I was like, no. And I was like, whoa, who said that? You know, like I thought that was what I was going to do. I was going to go drink some hooch, smoke some weed, and that was going to be... You know, then I was going to be out back on the run again, you know, and I didn't. And I don't know why I didn't. Again, like, this is the part of the journey that, like, God was with me every step of the way. And when I was leaving there, I just kind of, like, stayed in my cell, and I didn't, like, really hang out with anybody. When I was leaving, I felt like I didn't ever have to go back again, you know. And when I got outside, my cousin, she was waiting for me outside, and my cousin, like, she never, like, I don't know, she was always mad at me because I was always in trouble, and she was just like, I was like, what are you doing here? She's like, I'm bringing you back to the halfway house. I was like, I'm not going back to the halfway house. She's like, yes, you are. I was like, no, I'm not. I'm like, I'm good, I'm done. And she's like, no, you're not. You're going back. You're doing good. Like, let's keep going, you know? And I was like, I'm going to let you take me back there, but I'm going to leave when you leave, you know? Like, and then, like, this guy that sponsored me at the time, I had to get a sponsor because the house said get a sponsor. So I got a sponsor, and this guy shows up at the jail. This is midnight, you know? They release us at midnight. And he shows up, and he's like, I'm here to make sure you get to the halfway house. I'm like, what is everybody worried about where I'm going tonight? You know what I mean? Like, I just got done. Like, I'm done with this stuff. And they were just like, no, go back, you know? So I don't know what happened, but I got in the car with my cousin, and I went back to the halfway house, and I completed the halfway house. And then the first year with my steps, like, I read the steps my first year. Like, that's all I did, you know? Like, I said that I worked them, but no, I just read them. You know, I didn't do any work on them. Like, I did the fourth step. Like, here's my autobiography, all this, blah, blah, blah. And all that stuff did nothing, you know. I went back to work. And when I went back to work, I found a pretty decent job. Like, not decent, but I was, like, making enough money to survive with. And, like, money was always, like, my main motivator in life. You know, I came from, like, my family was pretty poor. So I remember, like, the lights getting turned out, like, eating cereal with water, and, like, cars getting taken away on tow trucks. And I was like, I'm never going to live like that. And I thought, like, hustling was the answer, you know. And so, like, money was always a big motivator for me. But so I stopped going to meetings. And I remember that I had this feeling that things were just weren't, like, it just wasn't. I didn't feel as good as I did the day I got out of the halfway house, right? And so... I ended up, like, I was just, like, really screwing up at that point. I did everything. I was doing everything wrong. One thing I was doing good was not drinking, you know? And I got to this point where, like, I was at the end of my first year of being clean. And that's all it was being clean. I ended up getting into a fight in a bar. And I ended up hurting somebody pretty bad. I stabbed somebody. And I was a year clean, you know? Like, and I remember this, like, and it's important because the next day my friends were coming to pick me up to bring me up to St. Joe's for a reunion. And, you know, like, it was, I was going up to St. Joe's for a second time the next year later, feeling exactly the same way I felt the first time going up. And I was like, something seriously wrong here, you know? And again, like, I got some kind of, like, spiritual experience up there. I came back home, and the reason I say that that job was, like, significant was because I came home and I quit the job. And I remember, like, I had a bunch of stuff. Like, I had a brand new car, and I had, like, a nice house and everything. And I gave it all away because my sponsor told me that I had to give it away. And, like, he was like, you got all that stuff the wrong way, you know? And, you know, I didn't like that. I didn't like the fact that I had to do that. But I, one day, like, I did it, you know? Like, and that's, like, a whole other story. But from there, like, that's when I started working the steps, you know? That's when I got to, like, step one, like, am I powerless over alcohol and drugs? I'm powerless over everything that revolves around them. You know what I mean? Like, that's what, I know that now. You know, I didn't know that my first year. I thought that just not drinking, I was cool. But I didn't know that you had to put in work, you know? Like I said before, I believed in God. I always believed in God. I used to, like, just when I was doing something stupid, I would, like, look up and be like, God, don't look at me right now. Like, you know, like, I'm going to do something stupid. Like, now it's, like, a lot different. Now I'm, like, you know, give me the open-mindedness. Give me the willingness to do stuff. Point me in the right direction, you know? And, you know, that was, it's, like, it's part of, like, the asking him for that stuff makes, like, three so much easier for me, you know, like, because I know that, like, when I'm in my will and I'm doing what I want to do, like, that's when, like, I end up having to lock in at 11 o'clock at night. That's where Marshall's will goes, is right back to jail. When I just let God handle it, I can still walk around with a smile on my face, and whatever happens, happens, you know. I came, like, on the, when I really got into, like, finding out who I was resentful against and figuring out, like, the real fourth step, you know, it was three people. It was my father, my stepfather, and my mother. You know, my mother married a guy who ended up leaving when I was three. You know, that was my father. She brought in another guy who was a falling down drunk who kicked the crap out of me every single day. You know, so, like, those were the people I was very resentful towards. That's where a lot of my actions came from. That's where a lot of my behaviors came from that I had to identify in step five, and figuring out what my defects are, the temper, the bad attitude, you know, all kinds of stuff, like the abandonment issues, everything. Working step five with my sponsor, I remember, like, I tried to fly through the steps, and the time I did the real steps and I did the real work on it, it took me about 2 years to do them because he made me spend, like, 2 or 3 months on each one. And I was like, I thought five was all I had to do was read you this stuff, you know? And he was like, you think that's all it is? Like, you know, he would ask me, like, what's your definition of being of humility? And I was like, well, I had to, when I was in a halfway house, I had to, like, stand in puddles of water and shovel ice for $8 an hour. Like, that made me very humble. He's like, you're an idiot. Like, and I was like, really? Like, that didn't make me humble? Like, I wasn't ever did that before, you know, and I'm never going to do it again, you know. But he was like, well, figure out what the real definition is and come back to me. So then I thought about it, you know, and I asked people and I talked to people about their fifth step. And, like, I learned that, like, for me, the definition of humility is, like, wanting to change and being able to change and saying that, all right, consciously saying I'm going to change. You know what I mean? And being able to, like, accept it, like the suggestions of AA. Like, I listen to every suggestion, you know. I haven't yet to listen to one that I'm like, I can't believe I listened to that suggestion, you know. But I know that if I don't listen to one, I've seen a lot of people not listen to a few of them. And, you know, I see where they go. But, for me, like, if I weren't to listen to one, I'm not going to listen to the next one I don't like or the next one, so I just try to listen to them all. the five and six, like, identifying all that stuff, and then when I had to ask God to remove those defects of character, I came back to my sponsor the next day after we did it, and I said, yes, I asked him. I was like, can we go to step 8? He was like, what do you mean you asked them? He's like, what actions have you done? And I realize now that, like, it's about, like, the service work. You know what I mean? Like, a big part of, like, my step 7 was, like, when I got involved with YPAW service, we started a group, HeavyPAW, back in 2007. And that was, like, something that, like, you know, that's where I started working on my character defects. I took the outreach chair, and I met a lot of people that are in this room right now, you know, like, 9 years ago. And, and it's, for me, like, removing those defects of characters, it wasn't just, like, asking to do it. It was actually picking up the phone and calling people and being like, hey, this is what's going on in my life. How do you deal with this when this is going on? You know, like, that's how I worked the step 7. It was through the service and making a list of people, you know, that was pretty quick and easy. You know, I didn't go into this big dramatic list about people that I got into fights with or stuff like that. Like, it just really didn't bother me, you know. Maybe one day it will. I'll go back to it. But as of now, it was very, very, like, small list. And it was the people that were the most impacted by my actions, you know. Having to go and apologize to them and stuff, like, I wasn't, like, scared to go up to them and be like, hey, you know, like, here it is. Like, sorry, you know. This is what I did. This is the work I'm doing. This is what I did to do it. Like, when I say that, like, getting involved with, like, the YPAW service and stuff, like, that's part of my step 9 to my family. That's part of, like, step 9 to my friends. Like, this is what I'm actually doing. I'm actually helping people now. I'm no longer hurting people, you know. 10, 11, and 12, I do them every single day. You know I make mistakes. I know I'm very far from being perfect, working a perfect program. That's why they put step 10 in, so I can be like, oh, yeah, crap. Like, I'm sorry again, you know, for, like, maybe this is just a little one, but still sorry for it. Like, I'm very spiritual. I always know that everything's going to be okay. You know, I have yet to really, really, like, come crashing down after I started taking the suggestions, after I started doing service work. And, like, 12, spread it, carry my message. I don't say no. Like, I'm grateful for everything I have and for the stuff that was given to me. And, you know, so, like, I got to do the, if I don't do those three things, those three steps every single day, like, my days start getting a little screwy again. You know, now I'm back to, like, third step. Like, oh, shit, God, can you, like, take this over again? Like, I'm screwing up again, you know? And, like, it's pretty crazy that it happens just that quick. But like I said, like, I've watched a lot of people relapse. Like, I got involved with Young People's Service when I was a year clean. And, like, right around the whole time with the whole bar incident and the whole new spiritual awakening is when I got that's when I got involved with the service. And I've continued to do it. I've stayed involved doing it. And I don't plan on going anywhere with it. You know, I've been involved in general service. Mostly, like, I did that for a few years. Got tired of it pretty quick. I mean, anyway, like, sometimes you got to practice a little bit more patience for that. For me, or in my area, anyway. Yeah, being a part of, like, the YPAW stuff, like, I mean, I was able to serve on the host committee for IKIPAW here in New York City. And I met a lot of you guys doing that, you know. And that's a year I'll never forget. It was, like, one of the worst years of my life, you know. It was definitely, like, I was out in California with my friend Jason and Ciccarelli, and, like, my little cousin was murdered, you know what I mean? And, like, I was like, man, this sucks. And they were like, you're going to go home? And I was like, I don't know. And I remember getting to the convention, and Dan looks at me, he goes, throws me a program. He goes, look at the first thing on there. And I was like, what is it? And I still remember it. I still got the program. It's like when gangsters meet spirituality, you know. And then, like, the Saturday night meeting was done through San Quentin Prison, you know. And I got, like, a lot. It was like, I was doing service. I was always right where I was supposed to be, you know. I was, anything I needed was always just given to me, you know what I mean? Like, when I say it was the worst year of my life, that was tough. My cousin was tough, you know. My grandmother passed away. My aunt committed suicide. My friend OD'd, like, but being on that committee and serving on that committee was still the best year of my life, you know what I mean? It turned the worst year into the best year because I had a commitment. I had things I had to do. I remember driving down to New York City. I was the only one coming from Hudson Valley, and I came twice a month, you know, for this for 16 months, you know, and, like, towards the end, it was a little bit longer, you know, and, but that's what it was, you know, like, that's how I got sober, that's my steps, the service and getting to know everybody. Thanks.